ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 4, text number 1. Vyasa Uvacha. All there. Vyasa Uvacha. Iti Bruvanam Samstuya. Muninam Dirgha Satrinam. Vridhakulapati sutam Bhavritcha sonaka bravit Vyasuvacha Iti bruvanam samstuya Muninam dirghasatrinam Vridhakulapati sutam Bhavritcha sonaka bravit. Please chant. Somebody? Students. Vyasa, Vyasa Dev, Uvacha, said, iti, thus, Bruvanam, speaking, Samstuya, congratulating, Muninam, of the great sages, Digha, prolong, Satrinam, of those engaged in the performance of sacrifice. Vridha, elderly. Kulapati, head of the assembly. Sutam, unto Suta Goswami. Bahu Richa, learned. Sonaka, of the name Sonaka. Abravit, addressed. Translation. On hearing Suta Goswami speak thus, Shaunaka Muni, who was the elderly, learned leader of all the rishis engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows. Report by Srila Prabhupada. In a meeting of learned men where there are congratulations or addresses for the speaker, the qualifications of the congratulator should be as follows. He must be the leader of the house and an elderly man. Well, at least 50% of that covers half of us here. He must be vastly learned also. Sri Shaunaka Rishi had all these qualifications, and thus he stood up to congratulate Sri Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Sukadev Goswami and also realized it personally. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original, and this is in italics, the original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it, yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. The leader of the assembly, Shaunaka, could estimate the value of the speaker, Sri Suta Goswami, simply by his uttering yaditam yata mati. And therefore, he was very glad to congratulate him in ecstasy. No learned man should be willing to hear a person who does not represent the original acharya. So the speaker and the audience were bona fide in the meeting where Bhagavatam was being recited for the second time. That should be the standard of recitation of Bhagavatam, so that the real purpose can be served without difficulty. Unless this situation is created, Bhagavatam recitation for extraneous purposes is useless labor, both for the speaker and for the audience. Om Agyana Tamarandas Yajanam Jana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Melitam Yatasmai Sri Guru Vinamaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pandum Lam Jayati Vidin Yakripatamaham Bande Sri Guru Vinamaha Jayasi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Siyadvaita Grava Shivasi the Gold of the Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Vanchakalpatirubhyascha kripa sindhudadeva cha patitanam pavani vyo vaishnavibhyo namaha. One thing I like about the later volumes, or the later chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the introduction that takes place at the beginning of the chapter. At the beginning of each of the chapters, there'll be a little paragraph or two, sometimes a page or two, introducing the subject matter of that chapter. It actually wasn't until the fifth canto when that process was begun. It would be an interesting conversation, I think, to have a little research into how that came to be about, who presented the idea, where it came from, how it manifested. But it's a nice addition, I feel, to giving us a direction in, as to where the particular chapter we're approaching is taking us to. What's going to be discussed. This is generally how a speaking presentation is done. Here are the subject matters we'll discuss. Now we'll go and approach each of them one by one. So it's a nice thing there. But here we are. This chapter we're approaching is entitled The Appearance of Sri Narada Muni, and it will introduce us to, of course, Narada Muni. But not right off. The first two verses of this chapter are spent in glorification of the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, that is, Suta Goswami in this case. That's an interesting layered arrangement we have for how we're hearing the Bhagavatam. Sukadev Goswami has spoken it to Parikshit. Suta is sitting in the audience and hears it. He speaks it to the sages headed by Shaunaka, and then it filters on down like that. Please silence cell phones. It filters on down like that to how we're presently hearing it. Now, we can understand that in a little bit of a practical application. Suppose Shamananda is speaking to Gauranga, and they're having some discussion. Now, in the course of this discussion, Thakurani overhears what their discussion, and she begins to discuss that with Nikunja. Not such a far-fetched idea. In the process of those two discussing it, Mangala hears it, and then Mangala begins to repeat what she's heard to Narottam. So in this way, we have that message being passed out. Now, usually, this process takes place in a game we call telephone. The object of the game of telephone is to see how distorted the original message that Shamananda speaks will be by the time it gets to Narottam. This is the goal of the game. This is exactly the opposite of the goal of reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Or as they say, the polar opposite, two opposite ends of the scale as to what the true spiritual message of Srimad Bhagavatam being spoken is. Now, in this purport here, this is very clearly noted by Srila Prabhupada. Actually, this purport is a reasonably short purport, but so packed with detail and so filled with such good information. Shonakamuni, he's the head of the sages who are gathered at Naimisharanya. This esteemed body has gathered to perform an Agnihotra that will last 1,000 years. Now, I found this particularly interesting point. When we perform our Agnihotras here just outside, we generally are focused on keeping them under an hour because the attention span and the attendance span won't last much longer. So neither, of course, to be honest, will the Prabhu hits focus. After about an hour, it becomes... So the sages, they were focused enough, they were potent enough, 1,000 years will do Agnihotra. Now, I'm sure there were different, you know, Puruhit said, okay, I'll take over now, you can go have your breakfast or whatever, however the arrangement was. But at any rate, the gathering was there to perform this ceremony for that period of time. Now, Prabhupada mentions here that it was clear Shanaka Rishi, that Suta Goswami was qualified to speak on these subjects as he approaches this gathering. And Prabhupada notes it in his purport for the use of these two words, yataditam and yatamati. Now, these two words are actually found, you can look through, well, wait a minute, it's not in the Sanskrit here. They're actually the concluding statements of the previous verse to the last chapter. And these are the words that Suta Goswami speaks about his own qualification. Not only does the audience have to accept the qualifications of the speaker, but the speaker has to be able to express his own qualification, not in the mood of arrogance, but, you know, yes, sometimes when you're traveling in India and somebody sees you, they're like, oh, you're a follower of Iskan, yes, and who is your guru? I'm in a shit about Srila Prabhupada. Oh, you know, some certain awe is there because you've taken diksha from Srila Prabhupada. Because he's so widely accepted as an elevated personality, you must be able to connect to that type of information. So in the same way, Suta Goswami speaks about his qualification being these two words, yataditam and yatamati, that his qualification for speaking is nothing more, which is an interesting combination of words, nothing more, than his having heard the message from the proper source. This is a very essential principle to the dissemination of Srimad Bhagavatam. Having heard the message of Srimad Bhagavatam from the proper source, and Prabhupada will spend the rest of the purport getting into that. But before we go to that, Prabhupada makes a point at the beginning of this, which is very clear, that Shonaka Rishi, he receives, greets, and glorifies Suta Goswami. I like the word Prabhupada uses, congratulator. He's the person giving the congratulations, a very practical word. But someone has to do. When there's a large banquet and some guest of honor has been asked to speak, he doesn't just step right up to the microphone. Hi, I'm Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, whatever, you know, some big personality. No, there's someone that introduces him, and that process of introduction includes a variety of glorifications of this person's qualities, of this person's achievements, of this person's merit, so that, oh, well, this must be somebody I want to hear from. In case anybody was sitting in the room and thought, oh, I think I'll just get up and go. Oh, no, wait, listen to the introduction. I want to hear from this person. So in the same way, Shonaka Rishi is presenting the qualifications and the appreciations of Sutta Goswami. Now, in this assembly, there are very many qualified brahmanas, very many qualified devotees, very many Vaishnavas and sages. So why is it that Shonaka took this action? I mean, any one of so many personalities could have gotten up and done this. Prabhupada again addresses this point. It's a matter of spiritual etiquette. This is an important principle in every aspect of our life, etiquette. How something is to be done in collaboration with the time, place, and circumstance. Behavior is not just something that's random. Behavior is something that's trained, just like sitting in the Bhagavatam class and listening instead of talking to each other. This is a principle of respecting the subject of the Bhagavatam. Showing respect to one's elders. I mentioned this the other day in the class that I was giving class on Vaishnavacharyas to the school the other day, and I'm trying to remember who it was I was speaking about. We talked about the subject of offering respects to the parents. It's the habit of some children to offer obeisances to their mother and father every morning. This is actually a very nice thing to do. I can say this objectively because I don't have any kids at home that I'm priming to offer obeisances to me. So I'm free from a personal motive in this, long past that stage. But the point is that by this principle of the children offering obeisances to their parents, and I'm looking at all the children in the class here, something you can incorporate into your daily activity, but to speak it to your teachers, this is a principle of spiritual etiquette, of showing respect, of showing appreciation, of showing submission. Now, this word in our modern society, submission, has a dirty meaning. I'm not submitting to anybody. I'm my own person. I don't have to submit to anybody. I don't have to do what anybody tells me. I can figure it out on my own. And in this state of mind, the material world continually descends into the ditch. But the fact of the matter is, a submissive mood is necessary. This is the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's instructing that this mood of submission, this mood of service, has to be there in relationship to the spiritual master. Actually, if we extend it further, it has to be there in any scenario. If you're going to get your PhD, you're going to get your master's degree, this means you're going to 8 or 12 years of college. And this means that in this process of going to college, you're going to have to listen to someone. And you're going to have to listen submissively because you're going to acquire and require that knowledge that they've got. And if the attitude is one of arrogance or one of dismissiveness, that message will not take seed. Just like when you're planting a garden. You can just take the seeds and throw them out there, and there's a good chance something's going to fall on the ground and grow. But if you carefully cultivate the soil, get a nice mixture of soil, use the proper combinations of additives, and then place the seed nicely in the soil in a very careful way, covering it up and then regularly watering that seed. And then as the plant grows, protecting it. There's so many little critters that come around that love to eat on little tender sprouts and things because they're very soft and tasty. So if you do all of those things, the result will come that you'll get a nice plant. It's funny, I have this compost in my backyard. And one of the easiest plants to grow are papaya. Everybody's had a papaya. There's like 6,422,000 seeds in every papaya. And literally, you just take them and throw them, and they're going to grow. But in our particular climate here, we do get a little bit of a cold winter. I mean, you know, not cold by New York standards, but anyway, we call it cold. So in that circumstance, the papaya trees will die. But this one papaya tree has grown right next to my compost. Now there's the compost, which is built up on one side, and then I have a shed right next to it, and then just behind it is a rather large tree. So it's a protected area by plant standards. Not exactly where you might, you know, pitch a home, but it's a protected area by plant standards. This papaya tree has been growing, I'm gonna guess 4 or 5 years, since it's about this big around. Now this is unusual for a papaya tree around here out in the open. But because it's in a protected environment, because it's been cultivated in such a way, and I do go out there and keep the weeds away from it at all, it's growing strong. Similarly, if we cultivate our devotional life with the proper spiritual etiquette, with the proper mood of submission, with the proper type of hearing, then we get the benefit. And what is that benefit? Krishna bhakti. I was just listening to a lecture on the way into the temple this morning. Prabhupada was talking about bhakti yoga. He said, Bhagavad Gita speaks of bhakti yoga. It doesn't speak of jnana yoga, of hatha yoga, of all these different, he names off 5 or 6 different types of yogas. He says bhakti yoga. Because bhakti yoga means devotion. Okay, devotion to who? Devotion to Sri Sri Radha Shamsundar, Krishna Balaram, Gaura-Nitai. Devotion to Srila Prabhupada. This process of devotion by submissive inquiry, by submissive service, will bring the result of a fully matured fruit. And that fruit will be our advancement in devotional service. So Shaunaka Rishi, being the senior, carries with him not only the age requirement, but the responsibility of knowing how to distinguish who is qualified to speak and who is not qualified to speak. We don't just ask anybody that walks in the door to sit down and give the Bhagavatam class. There's some qualifications. You have to have been studying the books. You have to have some qualification in your sadhana. You have to have some qualification in your commitment to devotional service, things of this nature. So, therefore, we have this responsibility that the congratulator has. Who will I congratulate? I congratulate so many people. I mean, in this room, you can congratulate everybody. We're all Vaishnavas. We're all endeavoring for devotional service. We're all here early, attending to the devotional activities. So, at this point, Prabhupada makes something else that's very important. And it's something that we should be aware of. Let me go to the verse here because personal realization does not mean one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya and at the same time realize the subject matter nicely to present it according to the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. So this is also one of the qualifications of the speaker. There has to be a level of realization, but not out of vanity. Oh, I've gained so much things beyond what I've learned from my teacher. I can speak so nicely about this. And with that realization, the ability to present it according to time, place, and circumstance. How I speak here sitting on the Bhagavatam seat in front of this assembly of Vaishnavas will be different than how I speak when I'm at the Woodstock Festival surrounded by a bunch of drunk concert goers. So the presentation will be different. The subject matter may be the same, but the manner in which it's presented. Just like one devotee was saying to me on the way in this morning, he said, we were talking about giving classes. I was congratulating him on his class recently. And he said, yeah, I said, next week I'm giving class on Tuesday when all the school students are here, and I have to think, how am I going to present this so that it's relevant to them? So that's why there is a particular standard for how the classes are presented, who's speaking, and all like this. But a very clear warning is given in this instruction to Srila Prabhupada, and that is, one should not, out of vanity, attempt to outdo the acharya. Yes, I'm a very learned scholar. We actually saw this in one of Prabhupada's own disciples. One of his intimate disciples, we'll be polite and not mention names. Someone that was a great scholar and attending with Prabhupada on traveling and translating and all. And he became so knowledgeable, so much more advanced than Srila Prabhupada. He went to Prabhupada and said, please bless me that I may find a suitable spiritual master to guide me in spiritual life. Prabhupada said, I bless you, you may go to hell. So out of vanity, we should not think that we know more than the Acharya. Matter of fact, there's a very wonderful pastime with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There was a scholar during Mahaprabhu's time in Jagannath Puri. Now, at this time, Sarup Damodar was attending with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And anyone that wanted to come and make a presentation had to come through Sarup Damodar first. Well, at any rate, there was his devotee named Balabhat. Now, Balabhat, he was quite an advanced devotee. Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions, though, that when he was in the company of advanced devotees, like Advaita Acharya, he appeared to be like a duck in the company of many white swans. And we've all seen this sometimes out in the lakes around here. You have a collection of white swans, and they're so elegant and beautiful and pristine. You get a little dark-colored duck, a little gray duck against these beautiful white backdrops of swans with their big, expansive wings and their long, elegant necks and their beautiful beaks. And so, it's just a little bit of a disturbance, you know? So it was considered that Balabhata, in the presence of Advaita Acharya and other such advanced devotees, was like a duck in the company of many swans. So one day, Balabhata said to Advaita Acharya, he said, every living entity in this creation is Prakriti. And thus, every living entity considers Krishna to be Pati, the husband. It is the duty of the chaste wife who is devoted to her husband not to utter the husband's name. Now, Madhav Dhimi will confirm this, that any chaste Indian woman will not speak her husband's name. Matter of fact, whenever she and I are talking about Sesha, she always refers to him as your best friend. She doesn't say his name. And so this is a quality. So, and then Balabhat says, but you followers of Krishna utter Krishna's name when you chant the name of Krishna. How do you call this a religious principle? Advaita Acharya kind of smiled at this. And he said, no, you were in front of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the personification of religious principles. So why don't you ask him? He'll give you the proper answer. So Balabhata and Advaita Acharya both turned to Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said, my dear Balabhata, you do not know anything about religious principles. Now imagine you're there in an assembly of devotees and you're in the front of Lord Chaitanya, who's accepted as the topmost of the devotees. And he turns to you and says, you don't know anything. It's a little diminishing. So he said, actually, this is what Chaitanya continued, actually, the first duty of the chaste woman is to carry out the orders of the husband. And what is the order of Krishna? To chant his name incessantly. Therefore, one is chaste and is adherent to the husband, Krishna's order, by chanting his name and cannot deny that order. Following this religious principle, a pure devotee of Lord Krishna always chants his name. And as a result, the fruit of ecstatic love for Krishna manifests. Now, Balabhata heard this and he became speechless. Not only did he become speechless, he became greatly unhappy. So he returned to his home and he thought, every day I am defeated in this assembly of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If by chance one day I become victorious over him, it will be the greatest source of happiness for me. Now, what did Prabhupada say in the purport? Not out of vanity. How vain is this? One day, if I can defeat Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I will be most happy. Now, what an arrogant personality. And when I am that happy, all of my shame and embarrassment will go away. I'm sorry, dear sir, but it will be just the opposite, as you'll see. By what means shall I adopt certain statements that will give me supremacy over Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Just see how devious the mind is. I got to concoct a way I'm going to defeat Mahaprabhu. So the next day, the devotees gathered, and in front of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Balabhavata came, offered his obeisances, he sat down, and he said something with great pride. Chaitanya Charitamrita uses that word. With great pride, Balabhavata spoke. In the commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, I have written one and have refuted the explanations of Sridhar Swami. I cannot accept Sridhar Swami's explanations. Now, Sridhar Swami, of course, is the authority for explaining Srimad Bhagavatam. His commentary, Srila Prabhupada used to carry around two books with him everywhere he went. One was the Sanskrit English dictionary, and the other was the commentary of all the different acharyas on Srimad Bhagavatam, and he would use this in his translation work. Topmost amongst those was Sridhar Swami. Balabhavata continues, whatever Sridhar Swami reads, he explains according to circumstances. We were just talking how you present everything is according to circumstances. Therefore, he is inconsistent in his explanation and cannot be accepted as an authority. Now, as I was just explaining, how I speak here will be different than how I speak at the Woodstock Festival. The subject is the same, but according to Balabhavata, that means it's inconsistent and not accepted as authority because you're presenting it in two different manners. The speaker has to know the audience. So Mahaprabhu smiled. If you're arguing with somebody and you present your point and then they smile at you, you know you're in for trouble. So Mahaprabhu smiled. And then he said, one who does not accept the Swami or the husband as an authority, I consider them to be a prostitute. Now, this is not a very glorious description. This is actually a cutting insult. After he said this, then Mahaprabhu removed that smile from his face and he became very grave. All the devotees present derived great satisfaction from seeing Balabhavata once again put in his place. Everybody except Balabhavata, that is. So by various hints and various arguments, Mahaprabhu corrected Balabhavata exactly as Krishna cut down the pride of the king, the false pride of the king Indra. How did Krishna cut the false pride of King Indra? Someone please tell me how he did that. Show of hands. Yes, Gauranga?
The Govardhan
pastime. There always has to be Govardhan Leela in every katha. So, at any rate, just as Krishna reduced Indra's pride, Mahaprabhu reduced Balabhavata's pride. Mahaprabhu continued. An ignorant living being does not recognize his actual prophet. Because of ignorance and pride, he sometimes considers prophet a loss. But when his pride is cut down, he can actually see his true benefit. Now, this is the point where the story takes an interesting turn. So Balabhavata returns home that night, just as previous nights. And he thinks to himself, previously, when I was in Prayag with Mahaprabhu, he was very kind to me. He accepted my invitations with his other devotees. And now here in Jagannath Puri, he has changed. Being very proud of my learning, I am thinking, let me become victorious over Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is purifying me by nullifying my false pride. For it is a characteristic of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he works and acts for the benefit of everyone. This shows that the cultivation Mahaprabhu was giving to Balabhavata, that the attention that he was giving to him is producing mature fruit. How? Balabhavata's pride is diminished. And he begins to realize, this idea of conquering Mahaprabhu is false on my part. Mahaprabhu is purifying me and taking away this false pride of mine. Matter of fact, he continues, I myself am falsely proud, advertising myself to be a learned scholar. Therefore, Mahaprabhu has done me a favor and cut down my false pride. So thinking in this way, Balabhavata reapproaches Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the next morning. This time, not only does he offer obeisances, but he offers obeisances, and then with great humility, he begins to offer various prayers, glorifying Mahaprabhu, and then seek shelter from Mahaprabhu and ultimately surrenders to Mahaprabhu. These are the three processes: to approach humbly, to offer prayers, to seek the shelter, and ultimately to surrender. This is the way that he attains that mercy. So, he approaches Mahaprabhu and he says, I am just a great fool. And indeed, I have acted like a fool by trying to demonstrate my learning in front of you. My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You have showed mercy to me, which is just benefiting your position by insulting me to cut down my false pride. Insult. This is what insults do. They cut down false pride. I don't know so much amongst the ladies, but amongst guys, this is a pretty common thing, to trash talk each other. Especially in the environment I'm in where I work. You know, it's a constant thing. You know, this kind of just cutting the other one. And most of the time it's done in a mood of, you know, humor. But this insulting process does just that. It cuts one's false pride. Now, if one is appropriately humble, they can learn from that. He continues, I'm an ignorant fool, for I interpreted as an insult what was meant for my own benefit. In this way, I am just like King Indra, who out of ignorance tried to surpass Krishna. So two mentions of Govardhan in this particular pastime. Indirectly, but it's still Govardhan. So he continues, my dear Lord, you have cured my blindness of false pride by smearing my eyes with the ointment of your mercy. I have committed offenses to you, so please forgive me. Another important process in the item of surrender, to admit one's mistakes and ask for forgiveness of those things. Mahaprabhu listens to everything Balabha has to say, and then he addresses him. My dear Balabha, you are both a greatly learned scholar and a great devotee. Wherever these two qualities are together, there cannot be a mountain of false pride. This particular statement by Mahaprabhu indicates two things. That when there is the position of being an advanced devotee and the position of being a great scholar, that false pride should not be present. If Mahaprabhu says, cannot be false pride, a mountain of false pride in this case, this means that we should not allow it to develop, and that if it's there, it should be removed. Mahaprabhu continues. He says, you have dared to criticize Sridhar Swami, and you have begun your commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam by not accepting his preaching, his authority, his position. Therefore, this is your false pride. Sridhar Swami is the spiritual master of the entire world because by his mercy, one can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Why we gathered here every day? We're not gathered here just for some oral exercise on the ears. We're gathered here so that we can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. This is why Srila Prabhupada instructed every day we should have Bhagavatam class, so that we can understand the principles of Bhagavatam. And we do it systematically. We're all the way back at the first canto again, having gone through all 12 cantos. It's a systematic study of Srimad Bhagavatam. And not just once, as we're doing, but again. Hopefully we'll be alive to do it a third time. And we'll see how that goes. So he says, therefore, I accept Sridhar Swami as my spiritual master. Whatever you write, due to false pride, trying to surpass Sridhar Swami would carry a contrary meaning. Therefore, no one would pay any attention to it. You cannot give a more demeaning comment to an author than to tell them, no one's going to pay any attention to what you wrote. Everyone that writes looks for book sales. Who's buying my book? Who's reading my book? If you meet an author and you can quote something from what he's written, he's going to become very happy. But Mahaprabhu says, what you've written, nobody's going to pay any attention to it because you have gone outside the process. The process to follow the acharyas. This is what Prabhupada stresses in this purport. So this pastime here really strengthens this point, really strengthens the importance of accepting the position of the acharyas. Now, If you spend any time at all hearing or reading the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, you've all heard him say this unlimitedly. I have made up nothing new. I am only presenting what I've heard from my spiritual master. This is Prabhupada's explanation of how to explain Srimad Bhagavatam. For us, the whole subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is a revelation. We've never heard anything like it until we came in contact with Srila Prabhupada. So to us, it might be something brand new. But Prabhupada's presentation of it was not anything brand new. He was presenting exactly what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur presented to him. And on back all the way to the original recitation by Sukadeva Goswami. In italics, in this purport, Prabhupada says this. Now, when there's the use of italics, this is like, hey, pay attention. This is important. Sometimes if you listen to the lectures of Radhana Swami, he'll begin to approach a very important point, and he'll make the statement, my dear devotees, please listen carefully to this point. When you hear that, the ears should perk up. Okay, something important is about to be said that will benefit me. And Prabhupada says it right here. When speaking, the original purpose of the text must be maintained. One cannot deviate off in one direction or another. Prabhupada explains this is why he titled his translation of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita as it is. In the early days, he said, there are so many translations of Bhagavad Gita. Actually, he was asked by that one reporter, why you, if there's so many translations of Bhagavad Gita, why you've done another one? Because this is Bhagavad Gita as it is, as Krishna meant it. So, Shanaka Rishi, he could understand that this Sutta Goswami is not going to create something new. He's simply speaking what he heard sitting in the assembly of Sukadeva Goswami, and, as Prabhupada adds into that sentence, what he has realized. And his realization is in that same way. So we may ask, I mean, this is a reasonable question, so what's the big deal? What's the point of this instruction that Prabhupada's making? Prabhupada answers that. No learned man should be willing to hear from a person who does not represent the original Acharya. Should not be willing to hear from a person who does not represent the original Acharya. Now in this case, not only is the hearing, but the speaker, the hearers, but the speakers, in other words, the audience and the speaker, they're all equally qualified. The representation that Sutta Goswami brings, having recited only what he heard from Sukadeva Goswami, just as Prabhupada only recited what he heard from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, this makes him qualified. But the audience also has to be qualified. Those of you that share the opportunity with me of sitting in this seat and speaking to the devotees, know the difference when you're speaking to a room full of devotees that are kind of, or sometimes when all the kids are here, they're gone, so I can say this, they talk with each other, and it's just like so distracting. But as opposed to when you can kind of tell you're in the zone, you know, that it's happened. You know, so sometimes that takes place. So when the audience and the speaker are both qualified, Prabhupada talks about this many times. He gives the example, just like for there to be a child. The husband has to be potent, and the wife has to be fertile. If one is and the other's not, or neither are, then there'll be no result. Both have to be equally balanced like that. So the same applies here in this presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. To get the real benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the speaker and the audience have to be qualified. So then Prabhupada makes, near the end of this purport, a very bold statement. That should be the standard for recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then the real purpose of Bhagavatam can be understood. If our presentation of Bhagavatam does not follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas, if our presentation of Bhagavatam does not fall upon the ears of a receptive audience, if our qualification to speak the Bhagavatam is not there, there'll be no result. But if all those things are properly in line, then the real purpose of the Bhagavatam can be understood. Prabhupada makes this point knowing very well that there are professional Bhagavatam speakers during Prabhupada's time, even back to the time of Mahaprabhu. These persons who, as Prabhupada says, speak the Bhagavatam simply to fill their belly. It's a common practice. You gather a large assembly, get all kinds of gifts and donations and whatever, and speak some things about the Bhagavatam which may or may not be accurate. As Prabhupada says, mostly they jump directly to the 10th canto, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. This is why our practice under Prabhupada's directions to start at the beginning. The Bhagavatam is like the form of the deity. When one goes before the deity, it's not the process that one looks immediately at the deity's face. It's hard not to, which I'm saying is so beautiful. But the process is we start at the feet and appreciate the feet. Tree Bunga, look at the threefold bending form. As we go up to the waist, he's always got a nice sash of some jewel there and a beautiful garland that follows the curves on his body or is flowing out from his dancing. And then up to the broad chest, which is decorated with so many jewels. And then to that beautiful face. Srimad Bhagavatam is the same way. This first canto that we're at now is considered to be the feet of Srimad Bhagavatam, the lotus feet of the Lord. And by hearing and submissively understanding this first canto, we can gain the ability to work our way through to the 10th canto, where the face of Krishna, or the Rasa Lila pastimes are there. So then Prabhupada closes, as we will. He closes this purport with a very bold statement. Sometimes Prabhupada will say something which is like, oh, and he says it. Unless this process is done, Bhagavatam recitation for extraneous purposes will be so much useless labor for the speaker and the audience. In other words, a waste of time. Listening to Bhagavatam is ever a waste of time? Yes. Because if the speaker is not qualified and is not presenting the message in line with the acharyas, he's not truly speaking the Bhagavatam. He's speaking some concocted idea. Therefore, it's a waste of time. It's an amazing statement. Unless this is done, Bhagavatam recitation is a useless labor. So we want to be very careful as we get the opportunity, either in circumstances like this or in our day-to-day speaking or whatever, to speak the Bhagavatam, that we are not making it useless labor by concocting our own ideas, by thinking we have a better way of doing it than the acharyas. We do not want to follow in the sampradaya of Balabhabhat. Well, at least the first half. We should follow in the second half where we fully surrender to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But therefore, we have to be careful. When we hear, who we hear the Bhagavatam from, Prabhupada was very cautious about allowing us to hear from this one, that one, and the other one. We have to be careful who we hear from, and we have to be careful what message they're speaking. We must be in the line of the acharyas. In our presentation, those acharyas headed by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, and executed likewise by their followers down to our current preachers in ISKCON, and for all future preachers. I'm sorry that they're not here, because all our future preachers are off being trained how to be future preachers for carrying on the message of Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada's message. So, it's some subjects of thought on this particular verse here as we enter into the fourth chapter. One other point that's not really related to this, but it's a little bit of a realization I had the other day. As we spend our years in devotional service, we see things in a certain manner. Just like a photographer wants to gain a particular aspect of a scene, so they use a particular type of filter. Yamaraj was great for this. He would take a filter and put a little bit of like Vaseline or something around the edge of it, and then it would give this kind of, you know, otherworldly kind of, you know, an amazing effect. And so take a picture like that, and then in the middle is Krishna, and then it's like it's blending. A very, very nice effect. Or some photographers will want a little bit more yellow, so they'll use a yellow filter. So how you see something through a lens gives you the understanding of what's there. So I was thinking, after years and years of seeing the world through the lens of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, we're jaded. In a very beneficial way, but we're jaded to see things a certain manner. I was driving the other day, and I had a passenger. I picked up the passenger's name was Shmiti. And as soon as I saw the name Shmiti, I immediately thought, Shruti Shmiti Pranadi. And so it wasn't anything on my part. It was due to the fact that I've heard Prabhupada recite that verse so many times that immediately we see something and we hear it. And it goes through that filter that Prabhupada has given us. Unfortunately, that particular individual was so far removed from having any idea what the name meant or could mean. It's very unfortunate. But the point is that our filter and how we see the word is through the teachings of the Acharya, in our case, Srila Prabhupada. So we'll finish there. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. If anybody has any comments, questions, corrections, we get a microphone. Well, I'll let you choose where we go here. I think Mataji's hand was up earlier. So, one side of the room or the other. Dharmaraj Prabhu?
Yeah. Just a comment and then a question. You know, you were talking about a 1,000-year sacrifice. So something strange kicked in me, so I just Googled it and to find out how long Andrew Prabhu has been doing his Kirtan Jagya. And that average 297,840 hours. So with him and then so many other Kirtan Jagyas that are going on, I have a feeling that sooner than later, we would also reach 1,000 years of sacrifice combined.
This is the real sacrifice. And in that purport, in the beginning of the chapter where this is described about the sages gathering, Prabhupada directly in the purport leads to chanting of the holy name as a sacrifice for the sage. And that's why their sacrifice was not successful. It was not meant for the sage. They were trying to do what they knew from a previous sage, but it had to come about that it was a different manner, and Prabhupada directly makes that link. Your question?
Yeah. You stress so much in your class about Srila Prabhupada, quoting Srila Prabhupada to hear the Bhagavatam from the proper source and one that was representing the Acharya. There is also a statement that an intelligent person should take good instructions even if it's being given by a fool. So is there any connection between that two, or how should we understand that or ask?
As long as the instruction is from a fool and not from a snake. From a fool you can correct, just like Balabhabhata. He was a fool. He thought, I can chastise Lord Chaitanya, I can correct him. But he wasn't poisonous and envious. Ramchandra Puri, he was poisonous and envious. He had to be just, all right, you go. Ramchandra Puri's leaving. Yay, he's gone. So as long as that message is only from a foolish person, not from an envious, poisonous person, because that poison will infect. Yeah. Mataji?
Okay. So we have the proper source and also the proper circumstance. Can you say that exactly as the verse said in the proper connection? How did it say in the verse?
Can you read it again?
Yeah.
What was the question again?
They are talking about this message through the proper source and the proper circumstance.
Yeah.
Yes, circumstance. That's what I want to have some enlightenment about. Sometime Prabhupada speaking in a certain circumstance is taking out of the context and putting another in another perspective. And then it seems that it's not understandable properly. I can give you an example. Sometimes you would give instruction to a certain person, a certain devotee, in a certain context. And that instruction is taken out of the context and put just barely like it is, and then it just doesn't fit anymore to be truly understood. You understand what I'm talking about? Can you enliven me a little bit of, is that instruction then lower down or misunderstood by the community?
This is why Prabhupada's books are the law book for society. Prabhupada's letters are time and circumstance. We don't necessarily know what was the question that came. We don't necessarily know what was the mood of that individual, what was the relationship with Prabhupada, what Prabhupada was trying to achieve in that particular circumstance. So the letters, they're instructive, but they're time and circumstance. They're subordinate to the instructions in the book. So if there's a doubt, we should always go to Prabhupada's books and see what is clearly indicated there. That's my understanding. Yes?
It was interesting, that quote you had about Lord Chaitanya when he did the put down, you know, of Sarvabhauma. He was emphasizing how, you know, anything written in, it seemed, I'm paraphrasing, you know, anything written in, with false ego, that's what disconnected from the message of the acharyas.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of idea that I got something new and different and I've surpassed, like a pundit might do, trying to out-argue other pundits.
It was just interesting. Yeah, no, it's true. This is why Prabhupada uses the phrase out of vanity. Yes. One should not speak the Bhagavatam. This is why, if we're going to sit here, we have to be humble. We offer some prayers before we sit. We offer some request to be able to speak the Bhagavatam. You know, we shouldn't think, yeah, I can do this. I got this. No problem. I mean, as an unqualified speaker, there's nothing worse than someone saying to you, oh, Prabhu Sonshil didn't show up. Could you sit down and give the class today? No. Because out of a mood of humility, some preparation has to go into it. Now, there are certain enlightened individuals in this room and in this community that can sit down and just give class anytime, Paul. I remember one devotee that back in the day would sit down to give the Bhagavad Gita class. He'd say, okay, someone name a chapter. So, chapter 6. Okay, give me a verse. Chapter 22. Okay, we'll speak on 622 today. Boom. Wonderful class. Okay, there are people like that. I ain't one of them. So the mood of submissive humility and preparation has to be there. If we're respecting the audience, the speaker has to respect the audience. It's not Don Rickles' show. You get up and you just throw horrible insults at the people in front of you. If you're respecting the audience, then you have to respect that you need to put some preparation into presenting the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, not out of vanity. Yeah. Anyway, we'll finish there. It's 9 o'clock. Thank you very much for listening to Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, Mother Sukada. All right.
I was just thinking, because you were saying about the book, you know, like that's the last word, you know, kind of what Prabhupada wrote in his books, right? But there's the book Bhagavat, and then there's the person Bhagavat, and it seems that, you know, Prabhupada's behavior and how he handle himself, that to me is just as important, because in some ways it just changes the whole view, the way you look at things. Like sometimes in the books, what he would say about women would almost be to a celibate audience, you know, in certain cases. Whereas the way Prabhupada behaved with women and how he treated women put it in a whole different light. So don't you think that it's just as important?
I never said it wasn't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We were talking about letters. Uh-huh. Yeah, Prabhupada's example and Prabhupada's books, these are the standard. These are the gold standard. Yes. Prabhupada's letters are time and circumstance. Prabhupada's example, Prabhupada's books, these are not time and circumstance. These are eternal instructions for us. That's my two cents on the subject. Anybody that's got a nickel can find me out. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.